and welcome to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. My name's Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly show where my goal is to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic athletes and coaching them to race at distances from sprint through to Ironman. Reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so if you enjoy today's conversation, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop into iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher and leave a rating and a review. And while you're there, please subscribe to our weekly episodes so that they can be downloaded straight into your phone or your iPad or wherever you choose to listen to them. And finally, to say thank you, I have a free gift for you. I've put together 25 of my top tips amassed from 30 years of racing and training and coaching in the sport. All you have to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll send it right out to you. Okay, now it's time to crack on with today's guest. Welcome back, listeners. And today I am joined by a returning guest. Yes, it's the White Witch, Louisa Edmondson, or Louisa Holmes, as she's known now. If you can recall, quite a way back, Louisa was one of our first guests when we talked about... What did we talk about, Louisa?
It was the bike fit.
Oh, yes. Yep. We talked about bike fit and that full body assessment. Now, today, I've asked Louisa to come and chat with us about breathing. Now, my assumption as a human being is I'm pretty good at breathing because I do it all day long. I don't ever feel like I'm short of breath and I haven't fallen over dead yet. So that, in my mind, that equates to somebody who's efficient at breathing. But a couple of years ago, you might recall, I broke my collarbone and I broke several ribs. And part of my rehab was to learn how to breathe properly during that process because... Something that happens when you break your ribs is you lose that function a little bit, and also in the recovery process. And then since then, I've gone on to spend quite a lot of time learning and practicing yoga. Louisa is my teacher, and one of the key elements of that is breathing. And I've since realized that I wasn't very good at breathing at all. And then I got to thinking, well, I wonder how many other people are not that good at breathing. So Louisa's come here to share some information. So Louisa, welcome to the show again.
Thanks for having me back.
And let's talk about this breathing then, because I guess most people would think, well, I'm all right at breathing, but you're going to tell us that we're not.
No, I would say the majority of the population don't breathe correctly. And a lot of it has got to do just with the whole, the way the world is at the moment. Everything has to be done at 100 miles an hour. People are holding in their tummies as well to look that little bit slimmer. So there's numerous reasons why people don't breathe. And yes, it's become quite interesting, and working with some of the high performing athletes have achieved huge things, yet they don't breathe correctly. And if you can get them breathing correctly, well.
So you're telling me that you've had high performing athletes, people who are competing on a world stage and finishing in the top 10, who actually aren't that efficient at breathing.
Yes.
In an endurance sport where oxygen is the key.
is the key element, yes.
Well, that just staggers me, really.
I think it does stagger a lot of people, and it staggers the athletes themselves more than anything because they think they're quite strong and efficient and they've done that well. But when you break it down, they don't breathe properly, and that can bring on a whole host of other symptoms, pain, inefficiencies, tightnesses, weird and wonderful symptoms throughout the whole body.
There's a book called The Oxygen Advantage from an author called Patrick McCowan. Which I will make reference to in the show notes. And that's all about breathing. And it's quite a thick book. And finding the words to write a book with several hundred pages just about breathing was quite interesting to me. But actually, when I got into the book and started reading about some of the exercises, a lot of them are very similar to what we do in yoga.
Yes.
But they were talking, probably like you are now, about some of the problems that's caused by breathing. So firstly, can you hazard a guess at the percentage of the population that you see that comes into the physio clinic? The percentage of the population that you think are probably not breathing effectively?
Oh, at least 50%, if not more.
Okay.
If not more.
So we're getting about 1,000 downloads a week now of our podcast. So there's a good chance that 500 people, at least 500 people listening to us chatting today, have got a breathing issue.
Yeah.
That they probably don't realise.
No. There's a couple of little things you can get them to do, check themselves.
Well, one of the things I've noticed actually is if you do ask people to take a big deep breath in, the first thing they do is they lift their shoulders up and they extend their rib cage.
Upper rib cage.
That's right. And what I haven't learned over the last few months is that sort of rib cage part of the lungs is only the top third. Yes. And really the rest of it is down in the upper stomach area.
Lungs are shaped like triangles. And so if we're only accessing a very small amount, there's only a certain amount of oxygen in and therefore a certain amount of carbon dioxide out. And so if that is limited, the oxygen that comes in, the body actually doesn't want to let it go. So it keeps hold of it. So the tolerance, the carbon dioxide is just blown off. And that can cause a whole host of issues. Namely, your body will become more anaerobic quicker because the body isn't letting go of the oxygen. The body then doesn't get the oxygen. It has to keep you going. So it will do so through anaerobic pathways, which is your lactic acid.
Right. And so then the muscles start to fill up with lactic acid. And of course, once that gets to a certain point, the anaerobic threshold, it inhibits muscular contractions. Yep. And so we feel like we're running or swimming through treacle.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Not to mention the effect on the neck and shoulder muscles and the pain that may cause.
Okay, let's start off by helping the listeners with some simple tests that they can do in their own home to see how efficient and effective they are with their breathing. So what's the first one they could be doing?
The first one would be to either sit in front of a mirror or get someone to watch you and just take a big deep breath in and see where that breath is. See what movement. I don't want to give away too much because then you automatically change the way that you're breathing, but looking at what's happening at the neck and the shoulders and the abdominals and just the body in general.
I can remember that your colleague Alison gave me that test to do when I was recovering from those broken ribs.
Yep.
And without giving the game away, I noticed that
I was doing all
the things that she said I shouldn't be doing.
Absolutely.
So I guess that's a form of muscular patterning in terms of the way the muscles contract in the same way as it is when our hamstrings fire instead of our glutes when we're running.
Yes.
And we need to do a lot of corrective exercises in order to repattern those muscles.
Yes. And there's little breathing pattern exercises you can do. And there's a whole load of reasons as to why you mainly be breathing like that. A lot of it is habit, but there's lots of physiological, emotional reasons. But as I say, a lot of it is habit. And it's about changing that habit slightly. So thinking about the way that you breathe maybe once or twice a day. And then also because of the muscular restrictions, you may also need some muscular sort of hands-on therapy to get the bones, the joints, the muscles, the fascia moving better.
So you mentioned there were several tests.
Yep.
So that's the first one. Just take your shirt off, sit in front of the mirror and just watch yourself breathing and observe what happens. And I guess if you don't know whether you're doing it correctly, you could always video yourself.
Oh,
most people have got a little video function on their phones now and then they could show it to somebody like you.
Yep.
Okay, so that's test one.
Yep.
What's test two?
Test two would be doing a similar thing, but more in function. So seeing where you breathe, if you're standing on one leg or if you're doing a lunge or a squat or, you know, even if you're sat on the bike on the turbo, having a look, right, where am I breathing? Where are my shoulders? Where are my abdominals? So that would be another one. And then a third one, and this is one that we use in clinic if we are suspecting a breathing pattern disorder, and they're often quite easy to pick up, is you take a normal breath in, you then have a full normal breath out, you then hold your breath and see how long it takes until you get that natural sort of impetus to take a breath back in.
Yeah, he mentions that in the oxygen advantage, and I can't remember what that what that score is called, but that's the test.
What's his name? I think it's like a Bruchenko or something is one of the Russians, and is the guy that we learnt our stuff from. It's a Leon Chato. There isn't a set amount of time, but generally, again, I shouldn't give away too much. Generally, a normal population, it should be over 25 seconds.
I think that it sounds like it's the same test. So again, I'll make reference to that one so people can see. So there are three tests there.
Yep.
Now, given that this figure you've mentioned at 50%, one in two of the people that are listening are going to try this test and find out that they're not breathing as effectively as possible, and probably chest breathing rather than stomach breathing.
Yep.
So what's the next step then once they've done these tests?
The next step would either be seeing a physio or an osteo that may be able to help you with that, to look for any muscular fascial restrictions, body pattern movements that may be causing that. Also, if you have any pain or discomfort, but also things that you can do yourself. And anyway, this will be a bit of a giveaway for testing how you breathe, is then retraining your breathing.
Well, before we go on to some of those steps that they can take, then what might have led the people to have breathing inefficiency? What might have led to them to get to this point in the first place?
There's quite a few reasons. A lot of it is anxiety and stress.
So you just tense up and hold yourself tight.
Absolutely. Yeah. Personalities, classic type A, always running about at 100 miles an hour. No time to breathe, but I'll keep going. type of person.
So not your typical triathlete.
No, not at all. Not at all. Biochemical things, so certain drugs, aspirin, alcohol can stimulate that. If you have some pain as well, you tend to be a bit more anxious, which can then drive the breathing pattern. Hormones. So there was actually an interesting thing. So for females in the post-luteal phase, after they've ovulated, there's an increase in your progesterone levels. Progesterone is a sort of like a breathing accelerator. And so that, combined with an already potential inability to tolerate too much carbon dioxide, can then enhance all that.
So
it naturally increases your breathing, your hyperventilation.
Okay, I'm trying to work that out now. So the week after their period,
midway, it's after midway. Ovulation.
Okay,
as
right.
Estrogen decreases and progesterone increases.
Okay. So midway through that phase, if they were keeping track of their exercise, might females who are in this position notice that exercise, rate of perceived desertion for exercise was a little higher?
It could be,
because at a pace where they normally feel comfortable, it becomes more uncomfortable because they're developing lactic acid quicker.
Yes, quite possibly, possibly.
So that would be something interesting to track
Absolutely.
Because then as well as testing your breathing, if you were tracking that and noticing that a particular time of the month that exercise became harder, then that might cause you to backtrack then and go and look at your breathing. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I challenge the breathing. And again, that has very much similar symptoms to what we would classify your premenstrual syndrome.
Okay. I mentioned that when I'd broken my collarbone and my ribs, obviously I'd taken a fairly heavy impact to my rib cage.
Yep.
But there are people that I know who won't have broken the ribs, but have nevertheless fallen over and taken a heavy tumble.
Yes.
They may have jarred the shoulder. There will be triathletes, quite a few listening to this, who've fallen from a bike, landed on the tarmac. So they've taken quite a heavy impact, even if they haven't broken anything.
Yep.
The most noticeable thing would be some bruising and maybe a little bit of skin loss.
Yes.
And as long as they've not broken a bone or dislocated anything that can function, most of them will be back to normal exercise and will never get checked out. But I'm guessing that an impact like that can cause, you talked about anxiety causing everything to tense up.
Yep. Yeah.
If somebody's about to punch you, you sort of tense up, ready to absorb it. So would the muscles respond in the same way and then cause that tightness around?
They could do, yes. But also from having that impact will have changed how that, say it was like elbow into shoulder, will have changed how that shoulder moves. So, you know, things you'd often become tight with your pectorals. Pecs are highly involved in breathing and the expansion of the rib cage. So yes, you may then, because of tension due to that accident, you may not be able to breathe correctly because of a muscular restriction caused by the accident, and then that becomes habit.
So I guess that even if you don't have any injuries that you or you don't think you've got any injuries that require treatment, it's always worth going to get checked out because there could be something underneath that you can't...
Quite possibly,
you don't know about at the moment. One of the things that I do remember was that my first bits of treatment after that accident indicated that my rib cage was stuck to my diaphragm. And that's, if it can't move freely, then I guess that's going to limit breathing.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Because the diaphragm should lower and broaden as you take a breath in. And if that's all stuck because the ribs, as they've healed, or the new sort of scar tissue potentially is sticking there, then no, you're not going to be able to breathe correctly.
At that time, Alison mentioned this little analogy about if you have two pieces of meat, in a packet, like two pieces of steak, and you drop them on the floor, you actually have to peel them apart.
Exactly.
So she said if you think about your internal organs like that, as you hit the deck, they're going to be squashed together. I think she mentioned that she used to work with the divers, so when they're jumping off that 10-metre board, they have that impact several times a day.
Yeah.
She used to have to do a lot of what you call visceral massage to tease those organs apart so they all move freely.
Absolutely.
So, you know, any sort of impact that we have as athletes is going to cause that sort of response from the muscles and organs.
And all the internal organs, all the fascia as well. It all just naturally, it tightens up, which causes a restriction in the blood flow and then will restrict movement, including breathing.
So this... I mean, if I can go back to the podcast we did previously where we talked about that assessment and you were looking at the functional movement of the body before doing a bike fit, you would probably assess something like breathing as well during
because that would
clearly affect somebody's bike fit.
Absolutely. If
a bike fit was going to put them into a position where their lungs were restricted, then having already being inefficient with your breathing would just exacerbate that problem.
Yeah. And you often find on the bike, people are far too overstretched. So then they round the upper back. So you're just squashing all the lower lungs. So in actual fact, you want to bring everything a bit further forward so you can extend the chest, and then you're opening up the chest so you can breathe a lot easier. And it also helps for your stability around the shoulders.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting points there about breathing. I remember watching the tour and watching some of the pro riders who are clearly, in the middle of the tour, their body fat figures are in the low single figures. And yet they looked, I thought, well, those guys look a bit chubby around the middle.
Yep.
But it's because they're belly breathing when they're climbing and they're breathing properly. That's just breathing and expanding the stomach. It's not because they're carrying too much fat.
Certainly aren't.
And the second thing is that I noticed that some of the guys, it looked like they were sitting a bit too upright. But when I looked again, they're actually riding rather than their shoulders rounded. They're riding with the sternum pressed forward a little bit and the shoulders pulled back. So maybe that's either... coaching to sit a bit more upright, or maybe strength and conditioning to strengthen the upper back muscles to keep the better posture.
Bit of both. And also because most people are sat hunched most of the day, then, they become much tighter through the front and much looser and weak through the back. So it's a combination of opening up the front and strengthening the back, like you said.
Okay, let's just talk a little bit. If we're not breathing efficiently, you mentioned some of the problems we get.
Yep.
Too much sort of like earlier onset of lactic acid creation.
Yep.
Can this have an impact on our general health, regardless of whether we're training? What sort of things might we be noticing there?
You can experience, there's a whole host of issues and all to do with the whole biochemical changes within the body. So as the body blows off the carbon dioxide, it goes into what we call respiratory alkalosis. I don't want to go into too depth because it's quite complicated, which then in effect lowers the pH of the body. The body has a very narrow pH for all its biochemical processes to keep us alive. So what the kidneys then do is they excrete some of your bicarbonate ion, like calcium and magnesium. And these can be leached from other parts of the body. And there is some more research now coming out where the breathing pattern, it leaches the calcium, which will leach the calcium out of the bones. So there is begetting more links with more sort of like osteoporosis.
And so if it's leaching the magnesium, does that mean the magnesium's leaving the body?
It's going into the body to circulate to lower the pH of the body.
Okay.
No, it's the other way around. Sorry, I always get that muddled.
So lowering the pH makes it
more acidic. So the body is trying to make it more acidic because it has become more alkaline.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, in terms of ill health, obviously, asthma and you know, breathing restrictions there.
But asthma is prescribed, and it's actually a breathing pattern disorder.
Overdiagnosed. And of course, we know that in cycling, it's been heavily diagnosed.
Oh, yes, it has indeed.
50% of the world's best athletes are asthmatic. Who would have thought that was possible? I mean, and most of our tour winners from Britain seem to be heavily hampered by this asthma thing, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's just one of the many. There's also links to that with brain fog, fatigue, increased sensitivity to pain, even to sort of like colon spasm, because if the blood flow reduces, because it already thinks it's got plenty of oxygen as the pressure of carbon dioxide reduces, blood flow reduces, which can then cause, you actually see it on MRI scans, where there's narrowing of the blood vessels to the brain, to parts of the gut.
Let me test a hypothesis here. If we're breathing more, when we're in the fight or flight mode, so and that's therefore the sympathetic nervous system, we tend to breathe faster and shorter.
Yes.
If we're breathing faster and shorter, is that likely to put us into that fight or flight mode?
Yes. So it's a catch-22.
Okay.
That one can cause the other, but then it can feed into that thing.
Okay. Now, being in the fight or flight mode for too long causes stimulation of cortisol and adrenaline.
Yes.
So we're in that go mode all the time.
Yep.
So that affects our ability to relax.
Yes.
It affects our ability to recover effectively.
Yeah.
It affects our ability to sleep properly. Yes. You know, we might be asleep, but we might not be getting any deep sleep, any of the restorative sleep. Yes. So as athletes, all of those things, being too much in the sympathetic nervous system, can cause burnout.
Yep.
It'll be affecting our ability to get the optimal benefits from all the training we're doing. So actually, some of that training we're doing might be wasted just because we're not breathing properly.
Yep.
Is that a hypothesis that's got legs?
I would say so, yes, because if you're not breathing correctly, you're not going to be able to work as hard as you potentially could.
But also, you're not going to be able to relax.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not going to be able to dampen the sympathetic. And in yoga, as you know, with the yoga classes, they say that the breathing in stimulates your sympathetic nervous system, and the full breath out stimulates more of your parasympathetic. So if there's a mismatch and you're breathing in and out, much longer in breaths than your out breaths, your sympathetic nervous system is going to go into overdrive.
Well, and I think that if you think, you mentioned triathletes, endurance athletes tend to be type A personalities. Yes. They like a challenge. They push themselves hard.
Yep.
They tend to have a bucket that's a life bucket that's overflowing before they even add the triathlon.
Yeah.
And maybe a lot of them that I know feel uncomfortable if they've got spare time.
Yes.
And so I guess the thing that I've learned about yoga is that taking that hour out to almost like do this sort of moving meditation really helps.
Yep.
I know there's quite a lot of studies now about heart rate variability and how even 3 to 5 minutes of mindful meditation four times a day can lower heart rate variability and push you back into that relaxed state.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we get towards the end of this podcast, we're going to be giving people some more drills that they can do, which is breathing. And we're already telling them that they need to do more mobility and they need to do a bit more stretching and they need to do more strength and conditioning.
Yes.
And they're all jumping up and down now, breathing erratically and shouting, I don't have the time, but we need to make time.
Yes, you do need to make time. And the one thing that this gentleman, Leon Chaito, the osteopath that specializes in all the breathing pattern, he said, instead of an overload of different exercises, if someone isn't breathing correctly, that's the biggest thing that they can do.
Yeah.
Especially if someone was struggling with a lot of different kind of pain, not necessarily triathletes, those with chronic pain, or they're struggling with time and, oh, I don't have time to do all this. If they're just going through the exercises willy-nilly because they need to tick that box, you may as well not bother do that and spend 5 minutes twice a day doing some breathing exercises.
Yeah, I think we're all very guilty of thinking about what training, what extra training we can do to further our fitness and get us closer to our goals. But sometimes it's not doing more training, it's maybe doing a bit less and doing more of something else.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And there's no reason why when you've learned how to breathe, you can't combine this. So you could you could be doing, in the way we're doing yoga, you could be doing your mobility work and focusing on your breathing at the same time. So you're back to the, what you called in that second test, functional breathing.
Yes, and that's where you'd progress. So you'd start with a breathing exercise in a nice, comfortable position. Then the progression is that you then start to do it right. Okay, you do it while you're doing your lunges. You maybe think about it while you're on the bike or going for a fast walk or a slow run or something like that.
Yeah, because I guess the ultimate goal is for us to be able to breathe efficiently while we're running, while we're swimming, while we're cycling.
Yes,
So that we can get the most out of that and stay aerobic, stay in that fat-burning zone and avoid developing too much lactic acid.
Yep.
Okay, so let's see if we can give our listeners a little bit more to do then. So we've given them some tests and if you think that there's anything amiss with your breathing at all, about your technique and about your efficiency, then book in to see somebody like Louisa and have this assessed professionally and work out if this inefficiency is just through bad habits that have been picked up over time, maybe spending too much time driving, too much time sitting in front of a computer, or maybe it's due to a previous injury or something else.
Yeah.
And then start to work towards that. So if we can give our listeners three or four things that they can be, even without diagnosing this, I guess that we can do some exercises, can't we? Everybody's going
to
be able to move forward with this by spending a few minutes a day.
Yes.
Okay, so let's give them a list of things that they can try.
I think the first one and the most simple one would just be simply to either lying on your back or even in sitting and just placing one hand sort of like chest, one hand on your sort of lower tummy or around the sort of ribs. And then just thinking, right, when I take a breath in, I want to feel very little movement in the upper hand, but a lot more movement in the lower hand. So you're allowing the lower ribs to sort of float up and out. And then the diaphragm all the way down to sort of like the pubic region, the pelvic floor, to lower and broaden. And the way I quite like to think of it is that the body is expanding, so fat body, so tummy comes out slightly, ribs float up and out on the in-breath. And then on the out-breath, everything is just naturally sort of relaxing back up and in. And that would be the simplest thing.
And do we do that for a particular time?
You maybe try and count 6 to 10 breaths twice a day. You don't want to overbreathe because then you can become too dizzy with too much oxygen.
Yeah.
So 6 to 10 breaths. And then generally we say, you know, don't really think about it at any other time. If you find yourself is getting a little bit stressed or anxious or tight up through the neck and shoulders, then maybe try 5-10 breaths of that. And that can help to relax you a little bit. The other thing, it's not a test. The other thing that I found quite interesting, as everybody is on mobile phones now, they found that 84% of people, while they texted, held the breath.
Yeah, really?
And a lot of tension and a lot of pain in the neck. Yes.
Okay, so if you're texting a lot, at least remind yourself
before
you start.
Make sure yourself you're breathing, yes. Yeah.
Well, maybe we should start a little app that when somebody opens the little texting app, a little message comes up that sort of prompts them to breathe.
Yeah, I think that would be quite good. Breathe.
Okay, so.
But no, I find that quite interesting.
6 to 10 breaths.
Yes.
One hand on the chest, one hand on the upper stomach.
Yep.
And then feeling the hand that's over the stomach moving.
Yeah, we're not so much upper stomach, more sort of like lower tummy,
around your belly button
area. Yep.
Okay, and do they breathe in for a specific amount of time?
You can start to count it, but in an ideal world, sort of like full inhalation with the same length of exhalation. So in yoga, we do, you know, count in for 4, count out for 4, count in for 5, and out for 5, and trying to get that even inhalation and even exhalation, so you're fully exhaling.
Now, one of the things that he points out in the Oxygen Advantage book is this idea that most humans actually breathe through their mouth.
Yes.
And we should be using our nose. And he makes a comment that if you were a farmer and you had an animal that was constantly breathing through its mouth, you'd call the vet because there would be something wrong with it.
Yep.
Is Is this just a bad habit we've learnt as humans, and should we all go back to trying to breathe through our noses as in and out as much as possible?
Yep. I would say so, yes. I mean, I haven't heard that, but yes, and I don't know. But I do think, yeah, you should breathe through your nose unless you're working really hard. Then, yeah, breathe through your nose. And again, there is that link. I remember years ago, someone that was retraining to help with their asthma was all the nose breathing rather than through the mouth.
Yeah, and I guess that...
warms the air.
Yeah, and the nose has filters to get rid of particles, whereas if you breathe through your mouth, you're just
going
sucking
straight into the
lungs, aren't you?
Yeah.
I know one of the ways in which we encourage people to exercise a little more easily is to breathe through the nose. And so for those of you who are listening who've tried that, you'll know that that can be quite messy to start with, particularly when it's cold in the winter. But the breathe right strips, I actually never used to think that they were that much good, because when you're breathing hard, you want to get as much air in as possible.
So you
breathe through your mouth. But the action of just pulling the nasal passages apart a little bit stops them getting so blocked. And after a couple of weeks of that, your nose stops producing so much sort of fluid, so your nose doesn't get blocked up.
Oh, yeah, great.
So nose breathing, lots to be said for that. Right, so we've got the 6 to 10 breaths twice a day.
Yep.
What would be the next one?
The next one, and we tend to give this if we have diagnosed a breathing pattern disorder, and it's called pursed lip breathing. And what it's meant to do is to strengthen the diaphragm as it eccentrically lengthens or broadens. So we're training that aspect of it, as well as increasing the tolerance to carbon dioxide. So what the little exercise does, there's a couple of positions you can be in. You can either lie on your back with your hands behind your head, or you can do in sitting or in standing with your hands clasped. When you take a normal breath in, you want to gently press the finger pads into the hands. That helps to inhibit the scalene muscles, the muscles around your neck, which will come on naturally with normal breath, but they're often overused. That helps to inhibit these muscles. So we're sitting comfortably or lying, take a breath in, press finger pads into the hands, and then on the breath out, we want to breathe out as if we have a candle about 6 inches in front of us that we're trying to flicker. We don't want to blow it out, we're flickering it. And we're doing it through pursed lips, which creates a resistance for the diaphragm to work against. Now, ideally, we want to breathe out for 4 to 6 seconds, pause for a second, and then take a normal breath back in. Ideally, we should be doing that or able to do that for 5 minutes continuously and twice a day. But what we find those with breathing pattern disorders is that can become quite stressful. So we may have to break it down into 5 lots of 1 minutes, 2 lots of 2.5 minutes, so that we can go back to normal breathing, their normal breathing, to then restart that breathing pattern correction.
So would you be doing this as well as the 6 to 10 breaths, or do you move on to this afterwards?
Two separate exercises, but it may be that, right, okay, I'll do that so I'm learning how to breathe correctly, and then a bit later I may do the pursed lip breathing exercise.
Okay.
So one is teaching you where to breathe correctly. The other is teaching you, well, not teaching you, is increasing the strength of your diaphragm, but also increasing your ability to tolerate carbon dioxide.
Okay.
And they found those with low back pain and instability through the pelvis, pelvic floor issues, often have a very fatigable diaphragm.
Okay, so they don't breathe properly, so
no,
that just compounds their issue.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm starting to understand why this breathing thing's so important.
It's a can
now.
Of worms.
Anything else we can try, or is that going to be enough?
I think that's enough at the moment, yep. So learning where and how to breathe, full inhalation, full exhalation, and then beginning to strengthen your diaphragm and increasing your tolerance to carbon dioxide.
Okay, well, let me sum up then. So first thing is to find out if you're breathing inefficiently.
Yep.
The chances are that you are, And that's not a problem. It's probably just lifestyle and, you know, layers upon layers of things that have developed over years, injuries and illnesses and little bits of pain. If you're concerned or if you really want to get an accurate diagnosis, go to see a qualified professional, somebody like Louisa, who can look at this and then find out what the root cause of your problem is. And at that point there, there may just be some prescription of exercise to do in the way that Louise has just described, or there may be some manipulative treatment that the physio needs to do to loosen off some tight muscles, or even to show you how to recruit those different muscles and get them firing in the right patterns. And you go from non-active to functional to back into training. So you put all this back into your swimming, biking and running.
You don't have to stop swimming, biking and running. You should naturally become involved in that, but also you being aware. Breathing is the only natural sort of essential thing that we do that we can manipulate.
And I, any coaches, particularly swim coaches who are listening to this will recognize that people do tend to hold the breath. So swimming is one of the only, probably the only sport where breathing is restricted. So you can only breathe 50% of the time. But even so, athletes are holding their breath underwater. So then they're even restricting their breathing opportunities even more. And that makes everything feel so much more difficult. So the number one element to fix in your swimming before hand entry or kick is to get your breathing patterns right, and because that will make everything else feel easier and more relaxed. And I think perhaps that's one of the reasons why people feel so panicky in the water is they may be apprehensive about the water, but then they don't breathe properly, and so that doubles their apprehension.
Absolutely. And they are one of the athletes that are on the higher scale of having a breathing pattern disorder are swimmers.
Okay. Well, it seems like this breathing thing isn't quite as simple as I first thought. And for most of you, if you are a little bit more mindful about the way you breathe, something you probably take for granted, you may find that not only does it improve your general health, your ability to sleep, and we know that sleep can impact on your ability to lose weight if that's one of your goals, it's probably also going to have an impact on your fitness and ultimately your athletic performance. So whilst you are looking for limiters in your ability to run fast or to swim fast or to create more power on the bike, you may want to look a bit further than that and look at breathing.
Yep, I would have to say so, yes.
Great. Well, that's fantastic. So something new for everybody to be working on. And in those moments of spare time when you've got 2 or 3 minutes, instead of just playing whatever game is currently in vogue on your phone or on your iPad.
Holding
your breath. Perhaps take 2-3 minutes to do a little bit of mindful meditation and breathing, and you might find that that makes a bigger impact on your daily life.
Yes.
Great. All right. Well, all right. Thank you, Louisa.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you.
That's an amazing insight into something, as I said, we all take for granted. So listeners, thank you for listening. That was Louisa Edmondson, the White Witch, as I call her. This was the Triathlon Coach Swapcast. My name was Simon Ward. Next week, we will be back with another amazing guest. But for now, enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you. Bye.
That's a wrap for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the conversation, and I hope you learned at least one thing. If this is the first time you've listened in, please go back and take a listen to some of our previous guests, and I can guarantee they will be just as good as the one you've just heard. If you've been a regular listener, then thank you for being a part of this journey with me so far. Finally, I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you about my SWAT Inner Circle program. In the last few years, I spent an awful lot of time creating training programs and resources to help you train and race at whatever triathlon distance you choose, and for some of the events outside of triathlon like aquabike, duathlon and swim run events. As a SWAT member, you get access to all of these plans for 12 months of the year. And on top of that, we provide guidance on strength and conditioning, nutrition, plus a whole host of other supportive activities which help you to train, recover and race better. We also have a really friendly Facebook community. It's an exclusive Facebook page for SWAT members only, and there are over 150 of them already. If you join, you'll be able to get access to that page and you'll be able to ask for help, and our members are all too happy to provide guidance and advice based on their experiences. I'll also be there to help you find solutions to your training problems, and all you have to do is tag me in the Facebook page in one of your posts, or you can book a 15-minute phone call should you need one. If you'd like more information, or if you're ready to press the button and join the SWAT Inner Circle, just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send you all of the details. So that's all for this week. Hopefully I'll see you again next week, same time, same place, with a different guest.